Welcome to the Shooting the Cue podcast, presented by Heath Riles Barbecue, with tips, tricks, and an inside look with some of the top pitmasters in the game. Now here's your host, Heath Riles.
All right, we are back for another episode of Shooting the Cue, and today, I'm joined by my lovely wife, Candace, and we have our good friend, Mr. Tuffy Stone, on with us today. How are you doing today, Tuffy?
I'm doing great. I've been wanting to come down to your headquarters here for some time, so coming down here and seeing what y'all are doing is great, and it's kind of weird being this close to Memphis and not cooking some.
Well, you know, anytime you don't have to do any real work, it's not as bad coming to Memphis.
I was rushing to get here, you know, and I was like, you know what, rushing to get here is still easier than rushing to get to a contest.
Yes, it is, no doubt. So, first off, for anybody that don't know you, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself? But I really don't know who don't know you, because you're pretty well known, in my opinion.
So, you know, I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I grew up in Lynchburg, Virginia. My mom, Charlotte, who's no longer with us, she gave me the nickname Tuffy long, long time ago. I was named after my dad, George. And when I was about two, Mom decided she didn't want two Georges in the same house, so she gave me the nickname Tuffy, and it stuck with me. I've been making my living feeding people since 1987, and started off in a French kitchen getting yelled at by Chef Alain, who lives down the street from me, and eventually bought a barbecue pit to reconnect with cooking and fell in love with cooking with fire. So I don't know. That's a little bit of...
Well, how did you go to culinary school, I'm assuming?
So, no, I did 4 years in the Marine Corps. I was a jarhead and got out of the Marine Corps and went to Richmond to go to college. And I had to make a living while I was going to school. So initially I was tending bar and waiting tables, and I really liked cooking as a hobby. Had a roommate. My grandmother had given me some sourdough starter, and I was making sourdough 3 days a week, because if you don't make sourdough 3 days a week, then you have way too much starter growing in your refrigerator. But anyways, I logged that path. I was like, man, I really like to become a better cook. I was thinking it was just going to be a domestic hobby. I figured knowing how to cook well would always be a good thing to know how to do. And so I researched all the chefs in Richmond and made a prioritized list as to which chef would be the best to learn under. And at the top of my list was a French restaurant called La Maisonette, and the chef's name was Alain Vincey, and I set up an appointment to go meet with him. You know, it was a working interview. He was in his chef's jacket with his chef hat on, and he had a sous chef in there, and sous chef was filleting a fish, and they had stock simmering in the back. And the chef was peeling, actually turning potatoes, just a little paring knife and shaping these little potatoes, as I told him that I wanted to learn how to cook and wanted to see if I could get a job there. And he said he'd call me, but I got the feeling he wasn't going to call me. But I went home that night to my apartment, and I thought about how clean that kitchen was and the smells and everything I'd seen in that kitchen. And I thought, that's the place to learn how to cook. And so I came up with this idea, because I already had a job paying my bills and I was going to college. And I went and knocked on his door the next morning, and he answered it. And I said, Chef, I tell you what, I can give you on Wednesdays and Saturdays from 8 in the morning till noon every week, and I'll work for free. I don't care what, you know, I'll wash dishes, I'll clean your lettuce, whatever. And I didn't think he'd say no, and he didn't say no. And I ended up working my way up. He eventually gave me 10% of the restaurant. He lives down the street. He's about three blocks from us now. But that's how I got into cooking, and getting yelled at by Chef Alain. And I did do classes through the culinary school for like sanitation and nutrition and, you know, management classes and things like that. But most of my culinary studies was just, you know, over a cutting board.
Well, hands-on is always the best. I mean, I'm not any kind of a chef, or don't claim to be. I don't want to say barely light a fire, but
I think you can light plenty of fires.
I just cook a lot of basic stuff, I guess, is what I'm good at. What my grandmother helped instill in me, and different ones like that. But I'm nowhere. You are a great chef. I mean, period. And so that has led you down so many different paths. Did you ever think you would be where you are today just by starting out in that kitchen, learning how to cook?
I mean,
like
just
that?
Sitting here at your table with a microphone in front of me, never in my life. You know, it's a crazy journey that barbecue's taken me on. You know, I started off with all this hard to pronounce, fancy, expensive food, and I had all these aspirations to really make a name of myself as a chef. And I used to volunteer for this event out in California called Masters of Food and Wine, and I'd just go out there and help. And you know, all the famous chefs you can think of would be there. And one day I just thought to myself, because my wife Leslie and I, we started a Sharper Palate, and we had a catering company. And you know, I realized, you know, being a catering chef, you'd never make a name for yourself, you know, because, you know, you only get to eat our food if you're invited to one of our events. So I kind of tabled that, and I said, I'm just going to be happy, you know, working for myself and, you know, making people happy with our catering company. And I kind of, like, put all those aspirations, you know, away. And I ended up buying a barbecue pit just to reconnect as a cook. And never in my life would I have imagined that I wanted to learn how to cook with wood. You know, I got a stick burner and got some hickory and made a rub. I read a number of books that really inspired me, you know, John Willenham and Smokey Hale and Paul Kirk and, you know, all these different.
I think Paul Kirk, everybody read that book.
I think you're right.
I think everybody.
But anyways, I made a rub and fired up this pit and seasoned a pork butt and put this meat on and ruined a big old load of meat. And it was very humbling. It's like I always say, barbecue is like the friendliest food. It's the most gregarious cuisine. It's, you know, it's historically taking the tough cuts of meat and trying to coax something great out of it. And it's usually, you know, family reunions and picnics and things like that. And so it's such an approachable food. But for me, I made a lot about bad barbecue. Occasionally I still do, but.
So transitioning from being a chef and then buying that barbecue pit, what year did you really start cooking barbecue contest?
So it was funny because I've had people ask me before, like, Tuffy, you must be competitive. And I don't really, I might be competitive, but I never really thought of myself that way. The only reason I signed up for a barbecue contest is because I figured I would go. First of all, you know, so I bought this barbecue pit. It was 2004. I was reading books. I was on the internet, you know, trying to learn everything that I could learn, and found out about there was barbecue competitions and there were sanctioning bodies. And I thought to myself, wow, I never thought there was such a thing. But the only reason I went to a barbecue contest was I figured I would meet people there that knew how to make barbecue. So I did that just to learn. So my first contest was in Lynchburg, Virginia, which is where I grew up, about 2.5 hours from where I live. And my next door neighbor, who's right over there, Kendall, I'll never forget, I pulled up the first, you know, you want to get a lot of people's attention, pull up in front of your house with barbecue pits. Anyways, I pulled up with this big reverse flow stick burner, and Kendall walked across the street and inquired about that. And anyways, he ended up going with me, and we went to Lynchburg, and we were staying. I used to run my pit lower, and I'd put my meat on sooner, and so we were up all night with the stick burners, and everybody else was asleep. The pellet cookers were asleep, you know, but we were up, you know, sticking logs in our fire, and I was meeting all these amazing people. I mean, y'all know how amazing these people are that we've met through our barbecue journey. And everybody's like, man, he hadn't even lit his fire yet. And I go, who hadn't lit their fire yet? And they go, Johnny. Johnny hadn't lit his fire yet. And I go, well, who's Johnny? They go, Johnny Trigg. And I go, who's Johnny Trigg? And so they told me who Johnny Trigg was. And anyways, about 4:30 in the morning, Johnny's light to his RV came on, and he came out. And I've always been the person to ask way too many questions, and I just walked over and introduced myself to him. And he was a little cranky, but
Johnny Trigg? Yeah. No.
No.
Anyways, that's the first time I ever saw Jambo. But we ended up, we cooked that day, and we got, I think, a good call in pork and a good call in brisket, and Johnny took all the Virginia money home back to Texas, and that was our first one, was September 2004.
Wow. I cooked against Johnny in 2000, and... six at the Wilson County Fairgrounds was the first time I met him in public.
Where's Wilson County Fair?
Up in Lebanon, Tennessee.
Oh, Amazing Blazing.
Yeah, Amazing Blazing. That was my first real barbecue contest out of town by myself, was that contest.
The two ladies that ran that contest, what do y'all call a hose here? They call it a hose pipe in Lebanon. But anyways, I love that. You know, they made brooms there. I don't know if they still do or not. We had that broom forever. They gave everybody that signed up for the contest these really nice brooms, and we had that broom, I bet you, for 15 years before it fell apart.
I don't remember. She didn't go with me then.
Do they still have that contest?
I wasn't married or anything then. No, they don't have it.
I was going to say, I don't think that contest.
But the only reason I remember all that, I remember Johnny, but we went out that Thursday night, and it was a bar to get in. It was $10 to get in. It was all you could drink to 10 p.m., for a dollar. You just kept carrying a bottle of beer back to the bar, and they'd swap it out. And, yeah, I don't remember the name of that place.
My guess is either him or Mike Davis won that day. Because back
– I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah. I mean, Mike Davis that year, he was winning everything. But
he was winning everything. Well, talking about winning, I mean, you're no chum. I mean, six-time barbecue overall world champion. You've won the Jack three times. 2013, 15, and 16. You've been inducted in the Barbecue Hall of Fame. You've won the American Roll Invitational in 2013. You won the Open, the American Roll, in 2014. KCBS Team of the Year. You've been Shoulder Team of the Year in 2010 and 2019. Or not Shoulder. You won Shoulder at Memphis in May in 2010 and 2019, right?
Yes, sir.
And you, what year did you win Ribs?
We didn't win Ribs. We took second in Ribs.
Second. I thought you won Ribs, too.
You're making me blush, Heath.
I mean, all of that being said, what was it like out of all of that? I mean, winning the Jack back-to-back?
It was surreal. It was unbelievable. I mean, you know, all those contests that you just named off, I think, I think everybody would, the cooks would agree, they're really special, and there's a lot of energy. But being down in the holler is always a magical contest, and being right there by Mulberry Creek. And, you know, I think one of the things that always blows me away with all these contests are the volunteers and the organizers and Jack Daniels, the Jack, and Lynchburg, Tennessee, and that whole community is a great example of just amazing people putting on a really special contest. So, I mean, going in there 2016, you know, we'd won it twice, and we had a good cook. But I think we had two calls that evening.
I was there when you won it in 2016. I had a first place brisket, didn't I? I mean, a perfect like brisket.
Yeah,
it was second place, 180 behind. I think me and Travis tied for brisket.
Well, I never get a brisket call in Lynchburg, Tennessee, so I was sitting there thinking how bad was my brisket. But anyways, it was pretty surreal. But, you know, probably the most amazing thing about all of that was getting to do it with my dad. My dad, he got so much joy going on the circuit and all the friends that it was so funny because I gave him his first iPhone, and my dad didn't hear very well. So iPhone and texting was a really great. But he ended up, through barbecue, meeting all these wonderful people, and he would come up to me, and he'd be like, they're requesting to be my friend on Facebook. Do you know them? And eventually he got more proficient at it. But, you know, I think being down there in the holler and just getting your name called, you know, is pretty special. But
especially in amongst the group of cooks that are there, because you had to win your way to get there.
Yeah,
it's not like
a rascal to get into.
Yeah, it is.
So out of all the contests that you have won, would you say that's the one that means the most to you? Or is there another one that you think would mean the most to you?
I mean, I mean, we've all three had a lot of success and had a lot of good days. And, you know, I don't think – I mean, that was special. You know, I think when we won Memphis in May overall, I think that was pretty cool because that was the last one. Actually, that was the last contest Dad and I won together. But I don't know. I mean
– they all have their own meaning.
I mean, it's – there's just, you know,
so special in the moment.
I think there's just these communities of these people. You know, it's like I've said this before, and I think there are some places like Memphis MA and probably the Jack and the Royal and maybe Houston Livestock Rodeo Show, and there's others. But I just kind of came up with this idea. It's like these contests make this place where barbecue dreams can come true. And
I've never heard it put like that, but that's the truth.
I mean, look at all those dreams up there. I mean,
well, that's a dream for me right here behind me, this trophy, because
that's first. I was there that year. I was what, 2 years ago, right?
Well, I can remember not till Chills talking about
it. I got
this.
Just chills.
I'm very young. I'm not young. I'm 45 right now, but I can remember being 17, 18, and when I started cooking. I can remember them talking about Myron winning Memphis in May and him cooking with nothing but peach wood. And my mother looking at me going, can you believe he cooked with nothing but peach wood? You know, and it was on the news that night, like at 10 p.m. And, I mean, I was already cooking then, and it was just like a local KCBS contest. I'd only cooked in a handful. But sitting across the table from you now and being respected among the peers that I've been respected at and the achievements that I've made has been – I still can't believe I'm where I am today. It's a shock.
I was there when you – I mean, when you make – when they come up and you've made finals, it's just like – I mean
– it's a feeling.
I mean, it's a feeling. Describe. It's like crazy. I mean, for anybody that might be listening to us at Memphis MA, you either – going to cook shoulders, ribs, or whole hog, and the top three in each of those categories is going to make what's called finals, and you got to win your blind box, and you got to it's going to be comparative judging where you're going to have three judges come and judge you on site face to face. And anyways, when you make finals, it's huge. So when you go to awards, it's kind of cool when you make finals, because you know, if worst case scenario, you're going to get the smallest of the big medal trophies. But to get the big one, so they called third, Heath, and then they get ready to call second. And this is the one of the few times in your life where you're like, please don't call our name.
Believe me, I'm sitting there and I'm begging the whole time, 10, 9, 8, and it's not nothing involved with us. But when I've been blessed enough to make finals at a regular contest, I don't have very many second place trophies. And I'm not saying that to be boastful
run.
Or anything like that. I went on a really good run. I was either going to be first or last. There was no in between. I mean, I was right out Ricky Bobbing it. That was the only way to go.
I'm going to guess that if you picked up that trophy right now, it's heavier today than it was at the moment.
You know, I talked about that with Mac Weaver, the new CEO of Memphis in May, the other day. We were fortunate enough, got invited to go down and be on the news with him. And, you're exactly right. The adrenaline rush when you get on that stage to grab that trophy is
– pick that thing
up. I picked it up and put it over my head. I mean, I was benching it. I mean, and now it hurts me if I was going to haul it back to Memphis in May. It hurts me to try to straggle it to get it to the truck out there. I mean, so I fully understand. Do you have a favorite trophy on the circuit that you've won?
You know, the Jack trophies are just – They're easy to pick up. They're so nice, you know. I don't have any banjos or fiddles, but they give you a guitar. I got three guitars from the Jack, but I don't. You know, it's interesting. So I had, like y'all, a ton of trophies, and I was like, I was thinking I was going to throw away a lot of the trophies because you know, where do you put them? And anyways. A friend of mine found out that I had these trophies and I didn't know what to do with them. So Bill Jones had this really amazing idea. So I gave him a ton of trophies and they're going to put new plaques on them and they're going to repurpose them for Kids Q. And I thought that was awesome. But So I get windy. I'm sorry, but I didn't give them the Jack trophies. I didn't give them the Royal trophies. I didn't give them Houston or Memphis. I mean, it's just there's certain trophies like Galax. Yeah. There. I mean, they're such unique, one of a kind trophies.
You give away your kind of what do we call them? Bowling trophies is what most people call them, but kind of the unique ones. You really want to hang on to. I've got some custom knives that were made at contests and things like that. And I'm like you. I don't really care about the bowling trophies per se. Yeah. But
I like them when I get them.
Yeah, I do too. Well, some of my favorite ones are the 17th Street. And I actually I have 8 of those pigs. Now, all of them are not here. But I've been fortunate enough to have 8 of them. And it's pretty cool. To have that many, I will say. And the glass-blown apples, you've cooked that contest, right?
I have. Actually, we did a barbecue or an episode of Barbecue Pitmasters, first season one. And that was that my first time? I don't remember. Anyways, I did MBN and the KCBS. So,
I remember watching that on TV now that you're saying that. You and Johnny, Myron, Leanne.
Yeah.
All of y'all are doing it. So, talking about Pitmasters, going right into that, that's moving right along to the next line I had. You co-hosted with Myron, Melissa, Mo, Leanne, Aaron Franklin at different times.
Right.
Do you have one over the other that you prefer not to co-host with?
I tell you what, it's so fun. Myron and I have eaten more bad takeout food in crummy little hotels all over this country. We had it down to a science. He would... we'd get off a set, and I'd go take a shower, and he'd take a shower, and then he would flick the little door latch so that the hotel door would stay open, and I would just come down to, and we would order takeout, and he'd have Crown, and I'd have beer, and Melissa and Myron and I, when we were on set together, you would have thought we went to high school together the way that the three of us acted, but. And Mo, I got a funny story about Mo. So I was usually a little bit of the class clown cut up. So I would say that I thought it was funny would be a little dry. And we were up on stage one time and I said something that I think was funny and took Mo a second and he realized what I just said was funny. And he said, "Oh, Tuffy, you're so funny." And he went to pat me on the back, and we're up on that stage, and he must have launched me about 10, 12 feet. But, I mean, like his little ring, his Ponderosa barbecue ring, you could put that thing on my thumb, and it would be like horseshoe on a spike,
It'd probably come close to going on 3 fingers.
I mean, it's just – anyway, but Big Bo's been getting he's a lot slimmer than he once was.
He has. He's been slimming down, and they're out of the country.
Abu Dhabi. Right?
Yeah.
That looked like a fun trip online, him and Melissa posting pictures. Did you see,
it looked like he had some fine food just on the flight over there.
I did see that. I wonder if he got his classic tattoo.
He's getting the falcon.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, he did. He put it on something.
I know he always gets when he goes to a new country.
What's one of your favorite moments of Pitmasters? Do you have a...
Wow. Well... it's so funny because everybody complained. They said they liked season one format and they didn't like it when they went into the other formats. But they wanted one of us to win every episode in season one. And it's just not going to happen, right?
Right.
Anyways, I was second runner-up at the American Royal at the Invitational when they filmed and got one of those crowds. And that was huge. And so that was – here's probably – the first episode that we ever shot, we were in Mesquite, Nevada, and it was interesting to me because I'd never met Paul Peterson, and he probably still is a really great chef from Texas, and
we had his restaurant. You remember when we went out to Texas and seeing Jesse and them on the square?
I think his place was on the square. Anyways, he had never done a barbecue contest before, and he had rented an RV. I think he had even rented or borrowed a pit on wheels. Anyways, they had all these travel problems, and we all know what it's like to be on the road and have mechanical failures.
Well, I just had some on of our own.
Yeah, I mean, it's never any fun. So he and his wife were stressed and at their wits' end by the time they rolled into Mesquite. And we had been, the rest of us had been kind of been brought up to speed on what was happening as they were trying to get to Mesquite. So they finally roll in there late, probably afternoon, Friday. I don't know if it was Thursday or Friday, but, and I looked at this guy's eyes. I looked at Paul's eyes, and he just looked so worn out and stressed. And I was trying to, I knew he hadn't done this before, and I was trying to explain to him how I would set up my rig if I were him. And I looked at him, and I could just tell he was fried. I said, "You want me to park this RV?" And so sometimes, you know, it can seem like it's contrived, but that was all real stuff. And I ended up parking his rig for him and helping him get. Of course, Johnny's over on the sideline saying, "What are you going to do, Tuffy? Wipe his ass for him too?"
Anyway. That's Johnny for you.
I know.
He's always going to get a good laugh in there for sure. Would you do something like Pitmasters again if you ever were given an opportunity?
You know, it's like if you think about not just Pitmasters, but what television has done for barbecue has been pretty amazing. Yeah. And it's happened all over the world. I mean, they play barbecue Pitmasters in Brazil, you know, and Australia and all over Europe. I think barbecue, I mean, has created a lot of opportunities for everybody that's interested in trying to make a business out of cooking with fire, grilling, and barbecue. I would, you know, the right show, I actually, I just did a couple of one-off shows last fall that'll air this spring, but I like teaching, you know. I think we, all three of us, like to help people cook better. But I would do television if I felt like it was the right show and I was a good fit for it. You know, it's funny. It's like I was cooking. I don't know if y'all ever cooked Diller, Georgia or not before.
Mm-mm,
oh, beautiful had. Special contest. And anyways, I was cooking. For some reason, I was cooking by myself that weekend. And it's Friday night, and my phone rang, and it was John Marcus. And he said, and for those who may not know, John he was the showrunner for Barbecue Pitmasters, but John called me up. He said, "Tuffy," I said, "I got this idea for a television show. I want to pitch it. I'm going to do a sizzle reel. It's called Barbecue Pitmasters. I'd like to send somebody down." This was Friday night. "I'd like to send somebody down to Richmond on Monday from New York, two people to come and film you for this sizzle reel, and I'm going to pitch this show." I said, "Sure, John, you can do that." He said, "Tuffy, I got to tell you, I cast your role as the professor." He says, "You can talk for hours on smoke and wood and fire." And I was like, all right, sounds good. So Monday about 5:00, I get a phone call from Leanne Whippen. And Leanne says, "Tuffy, I just got to apologize. I'm so sorry." I was like, "What are you sorry for?" She said, "They wanted me to talk trash. And so I started making fun of your spreadsheets and your... and color coding and all this kind of stuff." And I like stayed up all night because I'm like, I'm not a trash talker. I was like, what am I going to say? So I literally stayed up all night worrying about this stuff. And I finally came up with these ideas that of the trash I was going to talk. So they got there the next day. And so some of my ways of talking trash was like, you know, I love Leanne, but I never want to cook beside her because her hair dryer always knocks out the power on my site. And I don't know if it's true. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I hear Johnny's got a gun in his boot. And so it was those kind of things. That's
pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. What? And so with being on Pitmasters and all that, you eventually launched your own product line.
Yeah.
So what year did you launch that?
Well, so barbecue rubs and sauces initially came out under my restaurant name. I used to have, and for those listening, I sold Q. A lot of times come to Richmond and they go and eat at Q and they think they're coming to my place, but I sold Q about back in 18, so 6 years ago. So initially my rubs and my sauces were under the Q logo, and I had three sauces and two rubs, but the bulk of those sales was
All
through the restaurant. And then when I was selling Q, I got an opportunity to do a gift box that ultimately I think came down to 40,000 boxes with two rubs and two sauces in them. And So I did that all under Cool Smoke. In fact, the opportunity when it came to me, it was a man who's become a friend of mine. He said, Tuffy, I want you to put your name on the label and I want you to put your face on the label. I was like, oh, man, I appreciate this opportunity so much, but I can't put my face or my name on a label. My grandfather just always beat in my head humility and humbleness. And so he went with it. And so we did it all under Cool Smoke. And so I kind of dabbled in rubs and sauces. And then I got approached at Memphis in May the year we actually won it, and they wanted to market my rubs and sauces for me, and I wasn't really doing anything with it because I had this thought that, you know, being a chef was the way I'd make my living, and rubs and sauces would always just be kind of a little bit of mailbox money. And then COVID hit, and then all my great friends were like just, you know, doing so well with their rubs and sauces. People like you guys who had just done a really good job and focusing on putting your products in the backyards of the world. And my businesses, our catering company got shut down, our restaurant got shut down, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I used to think being a chef was like being a plumber, but they still need plumbers. They don't need us chefs. And so at that point, I did some soul searching, and so I was like, and I had so many people saying, Tuffy, Cool Smoke's a good name, but more people know your name than Cool Smoke. So this is all going on during COVID. I just bought a restaurant. I was scrubbing the floors and cleaning deep fat fryers, and I knew that if I was going to try and make a name of these or go with these new products, I was going to have to do it myself. And so I changed the labeling. I put my face on there. I did all these things that were just, I mean, if they were at this table, I would just get a little uncomfortable being around them. But one of the things that happened during that process was like, are these the best rubs and sauces that I have now that I'm capable of making? And I thought to myself, no, I can make them better. And so I spent like 6 months just retooling everything because, I mean, you guys have been so good at everything that y'all do. And I got some other friends that have had real success. And y'all just, you know, and you know this better than I do. There's so many products out there in the grilling and the barbecue space, and you've got to make sure that there's so many layers to it. That's why I'm here. I want to learn from you guys. I mean, it's not the only reason I'm here, but, you know, I mean, y'all are such a tremendous success, and you're always grinding. I mean, you know, being here at your headquarters, always putting out new products, but the content, all these things, but it's like, but the product you put out, it's not only how much you put out, but how good is it that you put out. And y'all's products, I mean, how many people out there are winning on the circuit using Heath Riles products? A lot. And so when I was going through this process, I was like, I retooled everything and I just tweaking them. And so I feel good about it now. But to answer your question in a very windy way, as the products are today, I'm probably going into my third year and I'm trying to do a better job with it.
Well, being in your third year of rebranding and doing all that, you've done a great job because, I mean, we've talked about it off camera, and you've doubled your business every year, so it's kind of hard not to see the growth patterns. You starting out just like we did, and I think it's just about getting out there more now, and you're out traveling and seeing people and going to events like we are, and it's just spreading the love of food. I mean, whether you're at a restaurant or whether you're out somewhere, it's still talking about good food.
You know, I just was at the MBBQA conference, and, you know, that event to me is always so amazing because there's always a real mixture of caterers and restaurateurs and some comp cooks and some people that are, you know, just doing rubs and sauces and products or whatever. And then there's always these people that are new and they're, like, trying to figure out what to do. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's rubs and sauces or social media or podcast or, you know, the videos that we make, you know, all these things. It's like there's so much to learn. It's like when it comes to rubs and sauces, it's like what kills Leslie and I are just all these acronyms in the industry, you know, all these different it's just a lot to learn.
I mean, I try to keep it basic with a lot of my names. You know, you see names out here that are so wild. And a lot of them are great, catchy names, but I've just tried to be real basic with a lot of my rubs. And, you know, just because something works for me don't mean it's going to work for somebody else. Everybody has their own niche of finding their way into the market.
Are the two behind you your top two?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
They are.
That's the reason I asked, because I'd asked you one day.
And I've got another – my competition barbecue rubs right there with them. I just need to have some more signs made. Over from the early days there.
Yeah. You're going to have to, like – Well, you got a new space coming.
Cause yeah, we got a new space coming. We're steady trying
what's that,
to evolve.
When's that new space going to be ready?
Well, we're building like that filming studio and barn dominium and everything. And they just finished the wiring. And my camera guy is doing the wiring today. And they're doing metal on the outside. And we should have insulation be ready to go in the next week or so.
How far of a drive is it from where we sit?
45 minutes.
Oh, so it's not that far.
No, 45 minutes. Not bad.
So you also have a book.
Yes, ma'am.
That you did.
2018.
Yeah.
Cool Smoke, The Art of Great Barbecue. You know, that was a whole nother, you know, golly, it's like we could all write books just on our journeys, I think. But that was something that I kept feeling like I should do. Mm-hmm. And I kept, you know, it was easy to put off because I knew it was going to be a big endeavor. But anyways, I finally put together what I thought a book, what I would have to say in a book, because there's so many great books out there. I mean, and it was a lot of work, you know. I would say, I just had a conversation with a friend recently, and they were asking me my thoughts on a book, and because they were considering doing one. And I was like, I think at some point, for some people, it makes sense to put that as a project on your list of things to do. But I didn't phone mine in. Actually, a computer very much like yours. They have what they call a pass, and so it's an opportunity to read everything, make sure you didn't make any mistakes, and you get three opportunities to do that, at least with my process. You had three times where you could, like, review and make sure you didn't make a mistake. And so this was my last night. So I was in my cooking school, and my neck hurt so bad that I'd finally taken my computer and put the screen down, and I was standing up and looking down just to have a different head position. And actually, a quote that I quoted forever, Amy Mills one time at an MBBQA conference, she said, and I was listening, she said, always give credit to the author, give credit to where credit's due. And that always stuck with me. And so I quoted Smokey Hale forever, paraphrasing that smoke is dirt. That really stuck with me. It's like smoke is dirt. We're cooking, we're not smoking. And that's why I became so obsessed with running a clean fire and log positioning and all this kind of stuff. So anyways, I'm reading this, and I'm giving credit to Smokey Hale, and it's the last time I can make an adjustment on my book. And I said, let me get that book, just make sure that I am saying this accurately, because I want to be right. So I went and get Smokey Hale's book, and I flipped through every page of the book, and I can't find it. I'm like, man, what is going on here? And I'm like, what other books were important to me at that point in my barbecue life? So I got John Willenham's book, and I found it. So if you look at my cookbook, it'll have on the page where it's written, it says John Willenham, Smoke is Dirt and all this. But if you go to the index, it'll have Smokey Hale, because it was too late to fix the index part of it. But I got it right. Anyways, books are a lot of work. I tried to be honest, and I tried to share things that are important to me and how I cook and the way I learned. And I also put in a lot of grilling, because we're so busy now. It's like, who's got time to cook a pork butt or a brisket or a rack of ribs? So I have all that in there, but I did a lot of grilled recipes, because I just felt like in our daily lives these days, it's easier sometimes just go out in the backyard and fire up the grill than it is to fire up the smoker.
I agree. Okay. I think the smoker is more of a weekend thing for a lot of people. You know, especially when sports are on and ball games and whatnot, you know, and you're enjoying the time out with your family on the weekends, relaxing or cutting the grass, putting a butt on or a brisket or something. And I'm like you, during the week, it's easy to throw on a piece of fish or a steak or a burger or a chop. And so
I just, as long as we're getting outside or even inside, as long as we're cooking. You know, it's like, I think just, you know, we cooked pork chops last night in a cast iron skillet, and I thought they were pretty good. But
do you have any more plans on another book?
You know, it's so funny. When I was done with that first book, I was like, I'm never doing a book again. And then I came up with an idea for another book. So I shared that idea with my literary agent, and she liked the idea. So, but I think when you do the book, you got to be ready for the book. Yeah. Right now, I'm my cook school is being refurbished. It's being painted on the outside today. That's going to take 3 days. Inside's getting repainted. We're really trying to do a better job with Tuffy Stone Barbecue Provisions, which even saying that, I can't even say it like that. It's like talking in third person. Anyways, trying to do a better job with our products. And so we need to take care of some projects before taking on another book, because you got to have room in your life when you do that book. Or you can be someone like Meathead. You know, Meathead would, you know, he'd do that. A lot of times he'd do that work on that book till like midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. You know,
but he's a workaholic for sure. He has put in a lot of years of service in the industry, and I don't know. It's I can remember as being really young watching him and a lot of the others too on the internet and the Barbecue Brethren, and you know, just everything how it's progressed over the years, and to see things evolve like it has, it's been incredible. And I guess that leads me to one of my last questions. What has it meant to you, or how do you feel barbecue has changed since you started to what it is now, with all the social media, access to cooking schools, videos, just everything like it is now, all the technology, pellet grills, you know, automatic igniters, things like that, versus your traditional pit of kind of where we come from to what this newer generation is experiencing now?
You know, I don't get really persnickety. As much as I love cooking on a stick burner, as much as I love cooking with a charcoal grill, I don't get real persnickety on what someone cooks on, because whether we're cooking with gas or pellets or electric, so many of the principles, I just want to teach. And so I can teach somebody how to cook a good rack of ribs or a good pork shoulder, or, you know, on all of those cooking devices. Yeah. I mean, you know, I hope you buy our rubs and sauces, but I can teach you how to make one too. And you know, it's just up to you whether you want to make it or whether you just want to open the kitchen cupboard. So I think it's kind of cool seeing, you know, I did an event in Vegas where a lot of technology was unveiled, and it just keeps getting slicker and slicker. I mean, I was the guy that used to say, if you email me, I'll call you right back. And we've come a long way since then. So I like the technology. I like the knowledge too. I mean, we've been doing competition a long time, and back when we all started Competition Barbecue, there really wasn't the information available to you, and maybe you made a good friend out there on the circuit that would take you off the side and show you how to do something. But I think the information is a lot more available these days, and I think that's good. I like seeing the growth. I think we could probably all three agree Competition Barbecue got a lot more serious. It used to be maybe a little bit more lighthearted.
Except in Houston, they're 90% party and 10% barbecue.
Yeah, y'all just came back from that. That's an amazing event. They have not forgotten how to be social.
They have not, 100%.
But no, I just hope it. You know, I think it's all cool. And the whole global thing that's happening with barbecue now. I mean,
And well, it's all due to a lot to pit masters, in my opinion, and you being one of the founding fathers of that, in my opinion, of barbecue, because y'all started a wildfire globally. You said it yourself. Pit masters is being aired now just in some countries, you know what I mean? It has over the last 5 years, and it was off the air before that.
Think about the sales that you have in Europe and Australia and New Zealand. And you know, just this high interest of people cooking American-style barbecue in other countries. But they're also doing some other cool stuff on their own, too. Yeah. You know.
That's right. Well, look, I just want to thank you for coming on today and taking the time to join us to shoot this podcast. And tell everybody where they can find you online, your socials and everything like that.
It's all TuffyStone.com. I think YouTube is Pitmaster Tuffy Stone. But Tuffy Stone, if you just go to my website, you can find everything, and that's just TuffyStone.com. I think, you know, you talk about Barbecue Brethren and a lot of the early forums that we had for barbecue knowledge and staying connected. I think what y'all are doing with your podcast, not only the audio but the video part of it, and bringing in so many. I watched Stale Cracker the other day, and then I watched Mo and Bob, and I like the way y'all take these little snippets out of them, so that when we're not, you know, able to be with our friends at a festival or a contest or wherever it might be, where we get to hang out together, you get to put us all in the living room together. And so thank you all for doing that.
Well, that's what we call shooting the cue. And there's nothing quite like it. Y'all be sure y'all join us next week for another episode. We'll be back. Thank you, Tuffy, for coming in and hanging out with us today.
Thank you for tuning in to the Shooting the Cue podcast. If you have any comments or suggestions for future episodes, please feel free to reach out to us on our social media channels or through our website. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. Leave us a review if you enjoyed the show. Until next time, keep shooting the cue.